1990, Locked Out. The game, Baltimore Orioles 4, Detroit Tigers 2, at Memorial Stadium in Baltimore. Attendance, 49,288. On Thursday, April 19th, 1990, the weather, perfect, sunny and 60s. Hall of Famers, Orioles manager Frank Robinson and shortstop Cal Ripken Jr., Tigers manager Sparky Anderson, and shortstop Alan Trammell. Game highlights. After playing their first 8 games of the season on the road, the Orioles came home to a very warm welcome, especially for the starting pitcher. Maryland native Dave Johnson started this home opener and earned the win. On the opposite side of the box score, Tiger starter Kevin Ritz didn't make it out of the first inning. After just 34 pitches and a pair of bases-loaded walks, Detroit skipper Sparky Anderson had seen enough of this once-promising young right-hander. Over the course of the afternoon, the Orioles scored 4 runs on just 7 hits, 6 of them singles, by taking advantage of 4 Detroit errors and 8 walks. The story. As much as things were changing in Major League Baseball, one thing seemed to remain the same: labor unrest. For the 7th time in 19 years, baseball came to a halt in 1990, and for the 2nd time, opening day was impacted. The collective bargaining agreement between the players and owners expired at the end of 1989. With spring training set to start on February 15, the owners locked the players out of camp until a new agreement was reached. The central issue was answering the question of when a player would be eligible for salary arbitration: after 2 years or 3. After 32 days of name-calling and finger-pointing, they settled in the middle. The owners also agreed to raise the annual pension fund contribution to $55 million and increase the Major League minimum annual salary from $68,000 to $100,000. The work stoppage wiped out most of spring training and delayed opening day by a week. Games missed in April were made up later in the season. As bad as baseball had become at avoiding shutdowns, by 1990, leadership was getting better at figuring out how to return to play. Games lost during the 2-day midseason strike of 1985 were easily rescheduled, but the back-to-work plans in 1972 and 81 were seriously flawed. The 14-day strike at the start of the 1972 season resulted in an unbalanced schedule, with teams playing between 153 and 156 games, rather than the regular 162. Since the owners refused to pay the players for games missed in April due to the strike, those games weren't made up. In Boston, fans were fuming in October as the Red Sox finished a half game behind the American League East champion Tigers because Detroit had played one less game. The split-season settlement in 1981 was even worse. Following the 51-day midseason strike, the owners decided on a format calling for division champions for each half season to play each other in October for the right to advance to the league championship series. When the postseason arrived, fans in Texas were crying foul. The Rangers finished the first half a game and a half behind the Oakland A's in the American League West, but played 4 fewer games and weren't invited to the postseason party. In the National League, both the St. Louis Cardinals and Cincinnati Reds posted the best overall records in their divisions, but were excluded from postseason play because they finished 2nd in each half season. Fans were seething. By 1990, the owners and players seemed to have figured out a better plan: an abbreviated 3-week spring training plus a 1-week delay in opening day was a workable solution. The 6 games missed in early April would be made up by tacking 3 games onto the end of the regular season, delaying the postseason a bit, and slotting the other 3 games into mutually agreed upon open dates on the team's schedules. The schedule shovel disrupted one opening day tradition and threatened another. The game's traditional first game host, the Cincinnati Reds, opened the season on the road for only the 3rd time in 114 years. On the north side of Chicago, the Cubs would have been forced to host their first ever opening night on Monday, April 9. Lights were finally installed at Wrigley Field in 1988. However, rain forced the game to be rescheduled to a more traditional Tuesday afternoon setting. On Chicago's south side, the White Sox began their final season at Comiskey Park before moving to their new stadium next door in 1991. The first pitch ceremony was newsworthy in multiple cities. In Boston, Toni Giamatti honored her late husband, a lifelong Red Sox fan, at Fenway Park. Bart Giamatti served as commissioner of baseball for only 5 months in 1989. Just days after officially taking charge of the sport, Giamatti was with President Bush when he threw out the first pitch on opening day at Memorial Stadium just a year earlier. The 51-year-old Giamatti died suddenly in September 1989 of a heart attack. At Shea Stadium in New York, Giamatti's friend and successor, Faye Vincent, handled the first pitch duties, one of four 1990 opening day games the new commissioner attended, part of his effort to heal the game following the work stoppage. After the Mets lost to Pittsburgh, Vincent flew to Toronto, where he joined Canadian Prime Minister Brian Mulroney and President Bush for yet another first pitch ceremony. The president's son, 43-year-old George W. Bush, was the managing general partner and part owner of the Texas Rangers, the Blue Jays' opponent that day. Rumors were circulating that young George might someday run for higher office, like governor of Texas? By opening day, Commissioner Vincent was rested and refreshed following a 12-hour marathon meeting 3 weeks earlier that brought an end to the month-long lockout. A groggy commissioner emerged from his office in the wee hours of the morning on March 19th. Vincent was asked if baseball's seventh work stoppage since 1972 had done damage to the great American pastime. Quote, "I think it was damaged, and everyone who lived through this period believes the game was damaged," he said candidly. "But I believe that the recuperative power of the game is substantial. But I know there has been damage, and a number of us regret that." The worst was yet to come. For the box score and play-by-play, visit openingday5050.com.